Welcome back to Show Me Today, the voice of Missouri. I'm Bill Pollack, getting a chance to talk with Gary Pinkel, the former Mizzou coach, the winningest coach in school history. How much do you miss coaching football?
I don't. It's funny. When I did this, I got lymphoma. Without going into the cancer part of it and everything. For me, it was it all became time. What are you going to do, Gary Pinkel, with your time? You work out of 52 weeks out of the year. I bet we work 35 weeks out of the year, work 70 hours a week. When you're in the business, you don't know it. You just do what you do. You love what you do, but you don't really know until you back away from it. And so time was mammoth with me, and I was not going to regret. I'm 5 years out now, and I'm doing pretty good. 5 years from now, I might not be here. I don't know. But I will never, ever regret that I didn't spend more time with my family, my friends, my wife, Missy, and my kids. I'll never have a regret for that because I had a great run. I just signed a 6-year contract, and it was a time for me to make sure that my priorities were in order. And so you ask that question again, what do you miss? And I really miss game day. I was in a zone. I mean, we were so well organized. I learned that from Don James. Put my headset on. I mean, we discussed as a staff about anything on Thursday and Friday, anything in the world that could happen in that game. How would we react? What we'd do? Our players got confidence off that. And we were totally in a zone. So I love game day. I mean, game time. I'm on that field. And obviously when you win, it's remarkably better. But the thing that I missed the most was taking care of my players. My players drove me nuts too. I mean, what an all great things. I wasn't their favorite coach a lot of time, because we demanded accountability and responsibility and being a great teammate and being unselfish and those kind of things. And when everybody got into it, eventually we became pretty good at that. But I did miss, as I talked before about, that's why I started my foundation, because I missed my players.
Let me ask this question. I don't want to get too far deep into the woods with football and X's and O's, but the one thing that amazes me when I interview coaches is that they remember games and situations and things like that many years, and they've coached a lot of games. Maybe not a particular win, but you talk about going over the details and, hey, if something happens, we're going to do this, we'll counter with this. Is there one of those moments that maybe it's not a win, but it's one of those things where you guys kind of talked about it and said, all right, we're going to do this if it happens, and it kind of worked, and you're like, wow, that it did go as planned?
I think probably a lot of times that happened. The bigger the game, and we remember 2007 playing Kansas in the Chiefs Stadium, and they were a great team that year, and we ended up number one in the nation after that game. But I remember calling a timeout right before. It was in the fourth quarter. I don't know exact time it was, but I remember calling a timeout and our defense calling a particular play, and their quarterback, I forget his name right now, Lorenzo Williams, and one of his other teammates got a sack in the end zone. That's the famous picture of their quarterback with this big hunk of grass. Was stuck in it. You remember that?
Yeah, Todd Reeson.
That's historic there, and he, by the way, he's a heck of a player. But those are moments that in that game was probably, I try to explain to people, as I was at Washington, we played in the Rose Bowl, or we played in the Orange Bowl, or here for us playing in the Cotton Bowl, or any of the great bowls that we were a part of, or the great rivalry games, and the Ohio State and Michigan, or whomever, Alabama, Auburn. That was as big a game day environment as any one of those ever. I mean, that was like, it's never, ever been. Probably might not ever be like that again, unfortunately. But that day in that stadium and against two great football teams, that was a moment. That was a moment that you look back.
Yeah, that was a great game. That was an amazing atmosphere there. What's one of Eli Drinkwitz's better qualities as a head coach at Mizzou?
I'm really impressed with Eli, I think he's and for all the coaches last year that coached college football or any coach that coached any sport, but for us who were in football, to go through what they had to go through and try to, you know, do all the ups and downs on getting the season done so you could, you know, still, you know, with all the bad, crazy things that were happening, you still could have some sport and where people have a chance to smile and compete and things like that. And let alone Eli having three spring practices or close to that, and all of a sudden they don't practice anymore. So, because you come into a stadium, a season your first year, you have your first spring. One of the big things you want to do is at the end of that spring practice, the 15 practices are in, you want to make sure all your personnel, you might move to wide receiver to corner or a safety to linebacker, all these personnel movements, especially the first year you're there, you have everybody in the right spots so that from that moment on, they can work all summer long to get better and compete and become a better player. And he had two practices. And I'm thinking, I mean, it's like the worst thing that could ever happen. He doesn't have excuses. He's high energy guy. And that's one thing I was very impressed with. I mean, he is high energy. And, So I'm real excited for him. We got a brand new facility in the end zone. In the end zone, that was one something Mike Alden and I, you know, that was a big deal to us. And I appreciate Jim Stirk getting that done and the administration, because, you know, when we got in the SEC, you better be building every year. I mean, if you're just going to sit back and just kind of be one of the guys, one of the boys, it's you're not going to be able to do it. The league is too incredible. And we all know it now. I think we all understand it. And so that commitment to our university, now we're doing a new indoor facility. And what we want the new indoor facility to do, we have some of our great alumni giving money, because we just don't want to have it an indoor facility. We just didn't want a south end zone project. We wanted one that people walked in, a 17-year-old, 18-year-old kid walked in and went, wow, look at this. We want to do the same thing now, this new indoor facility we're going to build probably in the next year. So they really get it. And the importance of all that stuff. And I think Eli understands that. And I'm just real excited for them. It's a tough job. You know, it's a really tough job. You know, it's like I said before, you know, as long as you win, it's fun to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. I know you started getting asked questions about this, about paying football players, paying student athletes, whether it was stipends or but I think name, likeness and image, I think that's the best way to go. I mean, if they have the ability off of their celebrity, they should be able to make a little extra. What do you think about the name, likeness, image route that they're going down?
Well, the NCAA did a cost of attendance there, which gave players the ability to stay all summer. Graduation rates are better than they've ever been. And the cost of attendance allows you to get a stipend every month. And that was great that they did that. And I think that was good. I'm a little bit bothered by it. I think I get what they're saying about it. I understand that. They're making an awful lot of money for the university. But we are not the NFL. You know, we're not an NFL, you know, franchise team. And I think that when you look at this, I'm just concerned about your left guards and all conference player. He's sold 10 shirts of his. Your quarterback is all conference player, and he's, you know, they've sold 500 of his jerseys, and he's getting a check for, you know, 427. This guy's getting a check for 4,800, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And we're all on the same team, and you know, that's problematic. You know, it's not the NFL. And so, I recognize it. What I would do is I would get all the players that play in the game, whether you play in a quarter or you play in the group, and all the likeness of the total amount, you divvy it for those guys that played in that particular game. That's what you do. Mm. And that's how you get it done. That's another way of doing it. I'm concerned, be honest with you, the biggest concern I have of you know, paying players to play just because likeness of the, you can, what are the alumni going to do? You don't think the alumni at different universities are going to make sure they buy every shirt, everything made? Don't you think that's going to happen at every university with your alumni? And where's that going to go? You know,
yeah.
Where's the end of that? So those are problematic to me. I have nothing wrong with paying kids extra money. When I went to college, you got a college education, and you know, you prepared, you helped prepare you for life. I thought that was pretty good, but I understand where they're at. I just, it's just hard for me to understand. The starting quarterback makes $80,000 a year, and the right defensive tackle makes $500.
Well, the way I looked at it, though, too, was if schools had to pay a stipend, then the fans were going to be the ones that get screwed, because that would just be passed along to them. You'd see concessions go up. You'd see ticket prices continue to go up. I thought, well, that's no good.
But wealthy alumni, I mean, I'm not going to say particular schools. I know right now, they'll anything likeness in the United States of America will be bought up.
Yeah.
Okay. There's no rules to it. You can buy as much as you want. So you're going to go in, you're going to have an attorney going into home, and this particular school is high level, national championship or anything. And you're going to have probably, maybe you might have an agent with them, tell them how much you think we're going to make from this thing. I don't think it's as simple as what a lot of people think it is.
Yeah.
If you do it the right way and fair way, it can be very positive for everybody. But I just wonder what will happen to college football if you're like another NFL team.
I really enjoyed this. It was great catching up with you again.
Well, it really is. I've been blessed my whole life. I get asked to speak at places and I didn't until the COVID thing came up all the time. I've always been surrounded by good people my whole life, and I had a great football staff here. I had so many great players around me and great kids that to this date that were, as a coach, you're around players that I got a letter from a player today and told him how much he loved me. And that changed his life. This is 15 years ago. It's a remarkable profession, but I got a guy, high school football coach that came to a school that nobody ever won a championship. We won a championship when I was there. I went to college. This guy named Don James comes into Kent State University after the May 4th shootings. He comes in there. A guy named Jack Lambert's a year older than me, a year my age, and he was for people out there, he's in the Hall of Fame. He played for the Pittsburgh Steelers. And a guy named Nick Saban, he's on that team too. Nick was one of the greatest coaches ever. And I just, my whole life's been like that. I meet a guy like, Don, I go work for Don James. I got a guy named Mike Alden. I just have a lot of people around me my whole life. And I've been very blessed. I'm very thankful. I've been lucky.
Your circumstances were, and I'll wrap up with this because you mentioned Nick Saban, and I've brought this up before. I mean, your situation was different because it was health related. But if Nick Saban came to you and said, Gary, what should I do? Should I keep coaching or should I get out of this? I mean, now that you've been on the other side and away from it, because it's like, I look at him and it's like, he could live a long time. We don't know, but it's like, what else do you have to accomplish? It's like, go out and enjoy life. And you were dealt a crappy hand there, but I feel good for you, though, that you've got that time to spend with your family, though, and do things outside of football, because it takes so much time. And I look at a guy like Saban, and it's like, yeah, he's going to go down as the greatest coach, but hey, what's he going to do when he's done with that, though?
when I retired, came out public to retire, Nick calls me up and says, are you sure about this? I mean, you don't think you can work through this a little bit? I said, I might, but I just told him it was about time for me and everything like that. And he says, Coach, he says, Gary, I don't know. I just don't know. I just want to coach. I just don't know what I would do if I wasn't coaching right now. I said, Nick, if I had good players like you, I wouldn't have resigned either. So he laughed. We laughed real hard and everything else.
Yeah.
But it's in his blood. He loves what he's doing. He's had a huge influence on kids, because he runs that program at a high level of integrity. He really does. People don't say that all about him, because everybody's trying to, get after him a little bit because of his success. But he knows what he's doing. He's very good at what he does.
Gary, thank you so much for the visit.
Bill, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Yeah, best of luck. And we'll keep in touch, and looking for great things from the GP Made Foundation.
Awesome. Thanks for having me on.
Alisa Nelson will tell us about Jobs for America's Graduates. That's next on Show Me Today.